Welcome. My name is Winsome Waite. I am Senior Director on the Practice Team here at the Alliance for Excellent Education. The Alliance is a national policy, practice, and advocacy organization dedicated to ensuring that all students, particularly those who are underserved, graduate from high school ready for success in college, a career, and citizenship. Thanks for watching this video, part of a learning series that will discuss deeper learning and the Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA. During this session, we will learn more about what deeper learning is, how states can use resources provided by ESSA to implement deeper learning practices. Deeper learning is attained when students master rigorous academic content, think critically and solve problems, work collaboratively, communicate effectively, direct their own learning, and have an academic mindset. Now let me introduce our panelists. With me in the studio is Samantha Battelle. Samantha is a policy analyst with the K-12 education team at the Center for American Progress. Her work focuses on school standards, school and district accountability, and school improvement. Prior to working at the Center for American Progress, Samantha was a confidential assistant at the U.S. Department of Education and a fellow at the American Constitution Society for Law and Policy. We're also joined by Noah Bookman, Chief Strategy Officer at Core Districts in California, and Rick Miller, Executive Director at Core Districts. Before we dive into our discussion, I want to thank the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation for its support of the Alliance's work in the area of deeper learning. It's great to have our panelists here with us today. And now, Samantha, I'll turn it over to you for the presentation.
Thank you, and thank you to the Alliance for Excellent Education for having us all here to speak about our work on deeper learning and school accountability. I'd like to start off with a discussion to frame what we mean when we say deeper learning in our context. According to the research, deeper learning is a what, or a set of specific competencies, which you can see here listed in green, and a how, or the instructional strategies that educators use to engage students in deeper learning so that they develop the competencies you see listed. And these are listed in no particular order, Winsome mentioned them before. So we have mastering rigorous academic content, learning how to think critically and solve problems, working collaboratively, communicating effectively, directing one's own learning, and developing an academic mindset or the belief in one's ability to grow. Now, fostering these competencies is an important step towards ensuring that students are college and career ready for a 21st century world. And over the course of this session, we'll talk about how deeper learning overlaps with the policies included in the Every Student Succeeds Act, and how through the provisions of Title I specifically of that act, states can implement elements of deeper learning statewide. So states are getting ready to implement this new law, which replaced No Child Left Behind as the main K-12 federal law. And states can use resources provided by ESSA to address both the how and the what of deeper learning. In fact, state and local policymakers, district and school leaders, and educators can use deeper learning as the framework through which they will design their plans to meet ESSA's requirements. The requirements and resources provided by three titles, Title I, Title II, and Title IV, of the law are particularly salient. We'll briefly mention Titles II and IV, and then concentrate on Title I throughout the rest of this presentation, which you see highlighted in red. Title I includes standards, assessments, and accountability. And this will be the focus of our presentation because it has significant impact on the local level. This section of the law requires states to set learning standards in reading and math and test students once every year in grades 3 through 8 and once in high school. The law requires learning standards to measure higher level skills, provides flexibilities in how to assess these skills, and how to holistically measure student performance. The implementation of Title I is a prime place for states and districts to emphasize deeper learning. Under Title II, states can use these funds to provide educators with the necessary professional development to teach two deeper learning competencies. And Title IV supports students' access to a well-rounded education, technology, and school climates that support safe and healthy students who are ready to learn deeper learning competencies. So we will explore specifically the intersection of deeper learning and school accountability within Title I. Accountability, however, is more than just school labeling. We like to think about it as a comprehensive system made up of three components that are linked together by a continuous cycle of improvement. These include school classifications, which is how states differentiate and label school performance, clear and transparent data reporting, and appropriate interventions and supports. And the six deeper learning competencies intersect with each of the three components of the system. And we can look at how they intersect with these components more specifically in each area. First, there are many school classification indicators that states can use to measure aspects of deeper learning. For example, schools can use climate surveys to measure effective communication and collaboration. And there are a bunch of examples listed here. Second, school classification systems go hand in hand with comprehensive data dashboards. And these report additional measures broken down by student subgroup to understand how all students are doing on a variety of indicators that measure deeper learning competencies. And these additional measures may not be the right fit to classify schools, but still provide school leaders with important resources and information to improve student performance. For example, measures of student wellness may help schools understand how receptive students may be to aspects of deeper learning, such as developing an academic mindset. Regarding interventions and support, this third bucket here, schools that need to improve are doing poorly academically, which can be symptomatic of other needs that students have. For example, districts can support deeper learning competencies using evidence-based strategies to help students direct their own learning, which may improve the student experience in school and ultimately improve performance, which is the goal. As states are designing these systems through a deeper learning lens, there are several considerations for them to keep in mind. So first, states should select indicators that measure what they intend for them to measure. If schools are concerned about students missing class, for example, chronic absenteeism is a better measure than attendance because it identifies students at risk for dropping out rather than those who are in class. Second, indicators must meet certain technical requirements of the law. And these are things like valid, reliable, and comparable, meaning that they measure what they intend to measure, they measure a specific result consistently over time, and they measure the same element of performance across different schools. And third, states should think about unintended consequences. When states add something to a school classification system, there could be an incentive to game the system or cheat to make schools look better. So with this context in mind, using a deeper learning lens, we will focus now specifically on the school classification measures as states are redesigning their systems under ESSA to meet the law's requirements. Under the new law, states are required to use at least 5 indicators in their systems. Listed here from left to right, we have achievement in reading and math, another academic indicator, such as student growth in reading and math, the 4-year graduation rate for high schools, which may take the place of a second academic indicator, and the option to use extended rates, such as the 5-, 6-, or 7-year rate, a measure of progress towards English language proficiency, and this may also include a measure of actual proficiency in that indicator, and at least one measure of school quality or student success, which is listed in purple. And this is going to be the focus of our presentation, where we can incorporate deeper learning into school classification systems. And this measure has caught the attention of state policymakers because they must decide which new measures to include in their school ratings under the new law for a more holistic measure of school performance. And states can and do include more than one. Previously, statewide systems focused more so on a more narrow set of indicators that primarily measured academic achievement and graduation rates for high schools and attendance for elementary and middle schools. Given this expanded opportunity and this expanded definition of school and student success, states have a greater ability to align their school classification indicators with measures of deeper learning. And while there may be a more obvious connection between academic achievement and the deeper learning competencies of mastering things like academic content and developing an academic mindset, states have an opportunity, especially to think about how this indicator could measure other aspects of deeper learning. So ESSA suggests several options for states to consider for these new measures of school quality or student success, including student engagement or an educator engagement, which gather data about the attitudes, perceptions, and beliefs about the school community and learning environment, student access to and completion of advanced coursework, such as advanced placement and dual credit that counts for college credit, post-secondary readiness, like performance on college entry exams, like SAT and ACT, and school climate and safety, which assesses specific dimensions of the school environment, or any other indicator a state chooses so long as it meets technical requirements of the law. Now, several of these measures can get at conditions of learning present in schools, which would be critical building blocks for deeper learning to occur. For example, students would need to feel safe and supported in order to learn the advanced skills that characterize deeper learning, and teachers would need to have buy-in to the types of teaching strategies required to foster this learning. By using measures of engagement and climate, states can also understand how well set up schools are to promote deeper learning. Now, to bring these indicators together to classify schools, ESSA requires that the four academic indicators you see listed in orange each receive substantial weight, and altogether much greater weight than the measures of school quality or student success listed in purple. This means that the academic measures must have a greater impact on the school classification. And ESSA requires states to combine measures in this way to identify two groups of schools for improvement: schools for comprehensive support and improvement, such as those performing in the bottom 5% of the state or those with low graduation rates, and schools for targeted support and improvement, such as those with low performing subgroups of students. Now, states can choose to further differentiate school performance if they'd like. For example, schools can use an A through F system or star ratings, and there are a bunch of approaches to sum up these measures, most commonly of which is the performance index, which sums to 100%. But there are a bunch of different measures, methods to combine these measures, such as decision rules or matrices. Now, these requirements really build on the work that states began prior to the law's passage. Before ESSA, some states started to use a broader set of measures to classify school performance. And in order to understand these indicators and make cross-state comparisons, we organize these measures into the seven categories you see listed. So achievement, such as proficiency in reading and math; student growth in multiple academic subjects; measures of English learner progress; early warning indicators, such as chronic absenteeism; persistence indicators, such as graduation rates; college and career-ready indicators, such as participation in and performance in college entry exams; and other indicators, such as access to the arts. Now, measures of school quality or student success span the last four categories that you see circled in red. And after we looked at the statewide systems that these states were using to classify school performance, we wanted to dig in specifically into the newer, less commonly used indicators that policymakers are considering amongst those four categories we had circled in red as measures of school quality or student success that can get at measures of deeper learning. We focused specifically on the indicators that you see here, which states began using prior to ESSA, and it's worth taking just a minute to talk through what they all are. So social and emotional learning is usually measured through surveys. No state has used social and emotional learning to classify schools, but there's work being done at the local level, and we'll hear from our guests soon about this really great innovation. School climate and culture is usually measured through a climate survey, and four states included these types of measures before ESSA. In addition, chronic absenteeism can be a useful proxy for a school's climate, and five states used this measure prior to the law's passage to classify schools, with one state also paying particular attention to student and parent engagement. And lastly, resource equity measures student access to resources like effective teachers and rigorous coursework in the arts. And five states use this type of measure, such as participation in the arts, but some may be the right fit for school ratings, while others better suited for reporting at the district and school level to drive continuous improvement. So we see that states are clearly interested in innovating to measure a broader set of skills and characteristics that students are developing even before ESSA was passed. And many of the innovative measures listed here are critical building blocks for deeper learning to occur. And in particular, the California Office to Reform Education, or CORE districts, offer insight for states considering some of these new indicators. The CORE districts created a school classification index that includes both measures of social and emotional learning and school climate and culture indicators. And we're happy here to have today Rick Miller and Noah Bookman from the CORE districts and invite them to give us an overview of their work.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. My name is Rick Miller, and I'm going to begin the conversation and then have my colleague Noah join in. Let me tell you a little bit about sort of how we came to including social emotional in our dashboard of indicators we consider, and then have Noah talk a little bit about how we did, and then we're happy to answer any questions you may have. So it's important to understand the context of when we designed this back as a part of a waiver from No Child Left Behind. So this was under the old accountability model of just looking at test scores. And so there was a wide rejection across the country that just looking simply at test scores and at proficiency levels was not an accurate description of whether or not a school was effective. And we were trying very hard not to avoid accountability, but to embrace accountability and find places where we could do more important work. But also, I think critical to our thinking was we're less trying to find a way to punish schools that appear not to be making a difference, but more try to find a way to find where we can use information to help schools get better. We often will talk to about using data as a flashlight, not a hammer. And that was our intention when we were designing this multiple measure model. So what we did was we actually went to the, at the time in California, we had multiple accountability models. We had the federal AYP, we had our state academic performance index, and then every local district mostly had a dashboard that they looked at their own. The dashboard, frankly, was what the districts honored the most, what they thought was most important, but they had to comply to federal and state law. So we started with, what do you look at locally? And we came up with a bunch with all these different measures that we thought mattered. And you can see there's actually 10 different things we consider most of what you've gone over today, which is growth and 4, 5, 6 year cohort grad rates and cultural climate surveys. We, you know, chronic absenteeism, EL reclassification, all those measures. And we think all mattered because the idea was, how will you know if a school is high performing? And we felt if all these measures were moving in the right direction, we were very confident this was a school that was preparing all their kids for college and career readiness. And so that's what we wanted to hold ourselves accountable for, what mattered. And equally important, we knew through the NCLB and API era in California that what you measure matters, and that including something in accountability sends a message and sends a signal to educators that this is something you want to pay attention to. The corollary is also true. If you don't include an accountability, it sends a message. It's not something we value highly. And in that context, and at this time, there was a lot of conversation on social emotional learning. Paul Tuff's book, How Children Succeed, had just come out. A lot of people reading it, thinking about it, and trying to think more holistically about how you might think about this in a setting of schools. Two of our districts in the core district, we represent 8 districts across the state of California, mostly our large urbans representing over 1 million students. And two of our districts were working with the Castle set of districts looking at social emotional in deep ways in Oakland Unified and Sacramento City Unified. So there was this real desire to sort of think about these measures. And we believed deeply at the time that looking at social emotional learning mattered for educators and mattered for schools. And it was something we wanted to honor. We were very purposeful saying it's not something we want to sort of say, if you don't have a large growth mindset, we want to put you into program improvement. This was very much about how we build up, we learn from each other, and we get better. And in that context, we spent some time thinking with our districts about what the best way to look at social emotional learning, what mattered, what didn't, and how we wanted to build it. We came to the conclusion that we could survey these measures as a way to sort of better understand whether schools were doing a good job in them, and then included them in our accountability model as, again, as a signal of, we think this matters. These are the measures that make a difference to helping improve student instruction and achievement. And so with that sort of context of why we did and what we were thinking, I want to turn to Noah and have him talk a little bit about how we actually rolled it out.
Thanks, Rick. So when we received the waiver, we had this broad concept that we wanted to measure these non-cognitive or social-emotional factors. And one of our first jobs as a set of districts was to figure out, well, how are we going to do that? And I think that any state who chooses to undergo this kind of a process to measure something that's different or new, can potentially learn some lessons from some of the work that we engaged in. We as CORE operate truly as a collaborative. So all the decisions that we made around what would go into our system and how we would approach it were done through a collaborative process. And that was definitely true about the development of our social emotional measures. We started with this notion of knowing that we wanted to measure these factors because they are important. Many of our districts felt that they were as important as measuring and developing students' academic skills, and were searching for a way to look at the quality of measurement and quality of implementation of efforts around these skills. So we started with going to some research partners and implementation partners at both the John Gardner Center for Youth at Stanford and our implementation partners at Transforming Education. And they helped us put together a set of informational briefs on different skills that we might consider, including our measurement system. And then what we did is we engaged our district leads and their teams to come together and look at all the different possibilities to try to identify which of all these different skills that we could measure, from everything from grit to happiness to joy for learning to some of the things that we ultimately end up including, like self-management or self-efficacy, to go through a process to help us figure out, well, which one of these things do we think is the most important and valuable for us to include in our approach. We use three key criteria for that, and we use these same three criteria for every indicator in our system under our waiver. The first criteria was, is the thing that we want to include actually measurable? In other words, do we have some evidence that you can measure this thing at scale for a reasonable cost? So we looked to different skills where we knew there were some set of indicators that were already in place that we could potentially try using across our districts. The second thing we looked at was, is this measure malleable, or is this something that we can actually impact as schools? So we looked to the research around studies that had been done, in this case, around different social emotional skills that showed that if you actually improve this thing, for instance, if you improve self-management, do we see some kind of impact on grades or on performance? And so for the skills that we ended up selecting, we had good evidence that they were indeed malleable, things that schools could have impact or influence on based upon the research. And the last thing we looked at was, is the skill in question or the habit or the mindset in question meaningful? In other words, is it meaningfully related to the long-term outcomes for students? So we looked at research that suggested that the skill or mindset or habit in question had good research around it as being related to both success in school and life. In other words, does it predict whether or not kids are going to do well in school? Does it predict whether or not they'll go to college and be successful in college or avoid risky behaviors as they got older? And for that, there is a decent amount of research from folks like James Heckman that shows which of these skills have that meaningfulness. So based upon that information, we went through an iterative exercise with our district staff to focus in on what we ended up landing on four skills: self-management, self-efficacy, growth mindset, and social awareness. We also found that these skills fit into the two broad buckets of interpersonal skills, that is, skills that have to do with how we interact with others in the world, and intrapersonal skills, or the thoughts and habits and mindsets that happen inside of us, which, again, there's good research base around those as the kind of two good framing ways to think about these non-cognitive or social emotional skills. We then went through a multi-year process to pilot these measures, get feedback on them, field test them, and then ultimately go to scale with them. And we're now in our third year of measuring social emotional skills across our core districts, with approximately 500,000 students participating in these survey instruments each year.
Thank you. This is incredibly insightful and helpful for states that are considering taking on this new work. And in particular, I appreciate the approach of looking at things with a flashlight, not a hammer, because the purpose of this is to highlight areas where schools can improve in order to help those students in their performance. So I have a couple of follow-up questions that I think might be helpful as states are moving forward with their own plans. And I was wondering what the process was like for getting stakeholders willing to develop and adopt such an innovative approach.
Well, I described a little bit of that in terms of our initial process around convening our district stakeholders around the selection process. One of the things that I think has been really interesting in this work is how positively, and this is something our research partners at PACE found when they went out and they interviewed people about the initial implementation of our measurement system, how positively educators have received just seeing the social emotional factors on a school report card. It's validation to the work that they, in a sense, have already been doing. Our partners at CASEL that Rick mentioned earlier had done a survey and asked teachers things like, do you already do work around social emotional skills in your classroom? And 9 out of 10 teachers say they already do work around social emotional factors in their classrooms. So in many ways, just seeing these data on the report card was a validation to stakeholders. We had some other approaches that we utilized too. So during our initial development years around the social emotional factors and other measures in our systems, our districts came together around a protocol to use to go out and reach out to stakeholders to share with them the measures in our system and to get reactions and feedback. And we utilized that to help us improve our reporting mechanisms, to help us that the timing with which we rolled the information out, and a few other factors like that. We also, as part of our intervention work, we're engaged with sets of schools in doing different kinds of collaborative capacity building, whether it be our school pairing program or a program that we called Communities of Practice. And part of that involved bringing together teams of school folks to be trained on improvement methodologies. And we would, during those sessions, we'd have sessions around the new measurement system and get feedback on that approach. So we try to take advantage of those opportunities where we had stakeholders together to get their input on things like the measurement approach and what should be weighted more or less than other things, how to deal with student groups, a number of different factors so that we could sharpen those approaches before they became part of our ultimate measurement system.
And that is incredibly helpful. And building on that, I'm wondering, what advice do you have for states that are thinking about this type of work, maybe not even necessarily in the social and emotional learning domain, but that are looking to create a more innovative system than they've had before, develop new measures to include in their school classification systems? It definitely seems like this is a long process that requires a lot of engagement, a lot of feedback. Do you have any specific advice to states that are kind of looking to branch out from what they've done in the past?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I think the whole country is sort of struggling with this right now. And the main thing I would say when it comes to SEL or other innovative measures is I think we have to try to carve out a place in this country where we try these things, but that doesn't mean we have to try them at scale. I think, when you look at this SEL work we're doing, it's actually quite controversial, the fact that we're including accountability. Frankly, interestingly enough, we didn't realize it would be as controversial as it was when we did it. We just thought it was the right thing to do and backed into a controversy. And the controversy is whether it's appropriate to use these measures in an accountability. And I think the problem is I think everyone's sort of thinking of the NCLB style accountability when they think about this and not thinking about where we've evolved to. Regardless, I certainly appreciate people's concerns and skepticism about this idea. But part of what we continuously say is that, whether or not it's a good idea to include these measures in accountability, we don't know yet. Like, I think the idea is our theory of action is by including them, we're going to help educators get more information and validate their work and improve our focus on these skill sets. We believe that's the way we've designed our system to allow that to happen. If, in fact, it turns out that teachers feel that they have to, get it right, and so they start, changing, or not teachers, but the systems start changing surveys or somehow trying to manipulate it to get the rights, that's not what we're trying to get at, and we would then stop doing it. So part of this is a learning exercise, and I think one of the beauties of the way we're doing it is we're not doing it at scale across California. A small subset of us are piloting, trying it, trying to do it responsibly to figure out and then learn. And if it works out to the way we want it to, then we can scale it statewide. It turns out we can't do this at scale, then we sort of shut it down and move on to the next thing. I think that idea of piloting innovation, it's something districts do all the time, but states really don't have a lot of mechanisms to do it, but ought to be thinking about ways to make that work.
And are there any particular challenges that you think states should be keeping in mind as they're going through this process?
In terms of SEL in particular, I think just the notion of trying to rethink, compliance and accountability. I think we have years and years of cultures built up in states and districts of what accountability looks like, what it means. And when you're trying to change that culture, it takes time, emphasis, and energy to do it. I think also there's going to be healthy skepticism from districts and states when you sort of say, "We're this is about helping you." I think there will be understandably skepticism. So you sort of have to sort of show that you're actually doing this, let people experience it, and then move it forward. So I think that, it's not groundbreaking advice, but the notion of sort of starting small, being slow with it, and sort of letting people experience it as you move forward, but also recognizing you're going to go into a culture we had a real struggle with this, that, our central offices were very used to compliance. They knew how to respond to compliance, and they didn't know how to respond to a different way of doing it. And so it just takes time to build that new theory of action within central offices, let alone state departments of education.
Thank you so much for all of this insight. It definitely lends itself to what we want to talk about in terms of what states are thinking about doing under ESSA with their new plans. They really have an opportunity to redefine their theory of action and to include new measures that expand beyond just test scores like they had traditionally done in the past. So with this context in mind, 17 states have submitted their ESSA plans to the Department of Education for peer review during the first submission window, which closed in May. And similar to our analysis of school classification systems before ESSA, we used our seven-category framework of indicators to review the measures that states plan to include in their new systems under ESSA. Four of these categories include measures of school quality or student success, which may measure aspects of deeper learning, from mastering rigorous academic content and learning to think critically to promoting academic mindsets, which is some of the things that the CORE folks touched on. Overall, we see the following trends. 16 states are using an early warning indicator. 6 states include a measure of persistence other than the 4-year graduation rate or extended year rates. 13 states include a measure of college and career readiness. And 13 states include an indicator from the other category, which covers everything from other assessment measures to school climate and access to the arts. And we can now dig into each of these categories to see how states can use these measures to promote deeper learning. So early warning indicators include measures that may help educators identify at-risk students. And these indicators are important measures of whether students have the opportunity for deeper learning, meaning whether they are physically present and keeping up with coursework. The common indicators that states are using include attendance, chronic absenteeism, which is most commonly the percent of students missing 10% or more of the school year, and on-track to graduate indicators, which states measure in several different ways under ESSA, such as the percentage of ninth graders earning at least 5 credits. And so far, we're seeing that these measures make up about 10% of school classification system ratings. Next, the category of persistence indicators. ESSA provides a unique opportunity to give schools credit for keeping students in school who might otherwise drop out. And we should note that the varied instructional strategies used to promote deeper learning competency development might be even more salient with students who are not engaged by more traditional teaching strategies. So how are states measuring school persistence under the new law? They are required to use the 4-year adjusted cohort graduation rate in school accountability, and they have the option to include extended cohort graduation rates, such as 5, 6, or even 7-year rates. Now, some states are going beyond this, including other measures of persistence, such as the dropout rate or a modified graduation rate. And these additional measures of persistence make up an average of about 9% of high school classification ratings. Now on to the college and career ready category. We know from the research that deeper learning competencies align with success in both college and careers, regardless of industry. In total, 13 states include a measure of college and career readiness in their school classification systems. And these are more established measures, which states have been collecting data on for some time, including participation and performance in advanced coursework, participation in career and technical education courses, work-based learning opportunities, and earning industry-recognized credentials. They are also measuring enrollment in post-secondary, education, and military enlistment. And of states that include these measures in their systems, they make up approximately 20% of high school ratings. Now, the final category of indicators, this other bucket, includes a variety of different indicators. And these include things like other assessment measures, which measure whether students are mastering rigorous academic content or identifying gaps in achievement. A handful of states use an indicator that measures whether or not schools provide students with access to a well-rounded education, including physical education, arts, music, and language courses. 3 states use a climate survey, and 1 state uses a student engagement survey, which may measure deeper learning competencies such as collaboration and effective communication. 1 state considers whether students with disabilities are included in general classrooms, and we find 1 state using class scores, which is a measure of pre-K classroom quality. Although few states are using them, measures of early learning are particularly important as the foundation for deeper learning. Plus, many early learning practices inherently support deeper learning competencies, such as communication. So this area may be right for states to consider as they broaden their measures under the new law. And these indicators, on average, make up around 13% of school classification ratings. So overall, there are a variety of measures that we're seeing states use to create more holistic school classification systems under the new law, and they have an opportunity to really broaden and rethink their systems. The next round of states must submit their plans to the U.S. Department of Education in September. And we recommend that they keep a couple of considerations in mind as they finalize their plans to align with ESSA and to promote deeper learning. First, they should limit the number of measures they use. States should not try to use every interesting indicator in their school classification system. Otherwise, they'll end up diluting their system and no one measure really matters, and school leaders won't know what to focus on as they work to promote students' deeper learning. Second, states should use discrete indicators. Some states in the first round of submission combine multiple measures into one indicator, such as including measures of college and career readiness in their achievement indicator. This complicates weighting decisions and may mask other measures, including the deeper learning measures that states want to highlight. Using a menu or index for school quality or student success indicators, such as a college and career ready index or rubric, is maybe okay, but try to keep it simple for clarity. Third, states need to assign indicators appropriate weighting. And we talked about this a bit earlier. States need to make sure that their school ratings consist mostly of their academic measures, and they have discretion in how to assign these weightings, but it may be helpful to look at past systems for some ideas. We also have an upcoming brief that does a deeper dive into all of the new measures of school quality or student success that states are using in their new systems, which might be helpful as states finalize their plans. And lastly, states should collect and report on additional measures that they are not using to classify schools, because not every indicator is the right fit for school ratings. States should use more established measures for their school ratings, such as chronic absenteeism and measures of college and career readiness, but go slowly when using new indicators. For example, state policymakers need to study what happens when there is an interest in including social and emotional learning in high-stakes environments. And district innovation like CORES is particularly useful to develop these new measures in a pilot approach. School climate and culture surveys, on the other hand, have a longer history in school classifications, but states that are considering surveys for the first time should really collect and report the data before using these instruments for school classifications. As a result, there's a lot to be said for comprehensive and transparent data dashboards. They provide important information and that may not be included in school ratings that district and school leaders can use to promote deeper learning and continuous improvement. So with all that in mind, I want to thank the Alliance again for inviting us here to speak. Your audience is welcome to contact us directly. So I have my email address here, and I also have my colleagues, Laura Jimenez. And feel free to access our wealth of materials on our various school accountability topics that are available on our website at the Center for American Progress.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sam. Well, we're at the end of our time today, and I just want to thank you, Sam, Noah, and Rick, for the very informative information, for your willingness to be part of this video learning series, and for the excellent information on ESSA and deeper learning.
Thank you so much.
Please be sure to visit allfored.org/deeperlearning for further videos on deeper learning. And once again, we wish to thank the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation for its support of the Alliance's work in the area of deeper learning. I am Winsome Waite for the Alliance for Excellent Education. Thanks for watching and learning along with us.